All right, please proceed.
Richard Letchik on behalf of the appellant, Incarnation Salas. I'll reserve 2 minutes.
Okay.
Unless the court directs me otherwise, I intend to focus on the issue of prosecutorial misconduct. Prosecutors have a duty to seek convictions based only on probative evidence and sound reason. Prosecutors should not seek to inflame the passions or the prejudices of the jury. In this case, the prosecutor sought to convict Mr. Salas of murder based on an emotional appeal. The prosecutor did this through a slideshow. This slideshow contained non-probative and altered evidence. The prosecutor
had all those photos been admitted as exhibits?
Yes, and I do need to clarify one photo.
You did mention one that you said wasn't.
Yes, so the photo of Mr. Salas, upon my review of the record in preparation for this argument, I did discover that I neglected to review one exhibit, and that exhibit is a copy of Mr. Salas's picture when he got his license, his driver's license. And
In the record as?
I have designated as part of the record, and I have a copy of
So can we just assume that all of the photos in the slideshow were admitted as exhibits?
They were admitted as exhibits, but they were all altered.
Right. No, I understand.
And even the photo of Mr. Salas was altered, and if I could.
No, you've explained that in your brief about how it was a license picture and they cropped it, et cetera.
Well, this is different. Actually, the whole photo was admitted into evidence. So
the photo that was used in the slideshow?
Yes.
The one that's juxtaposed?
Yes, the one that's juxtaposed with the.
So they didn't alter that, or they did?
They did alter that. So
they altered it, but then they submitted the altered one into evidence. Is that what
they submitted? No, they submitted the altered evidence occurs on the slide, and this was what was admitted.
It was altered
in that the frame it was sort of pushed in, sort of like a frame and excised.
So
that's the alteration. So it was cropped. Yes, both photos were cropped.
But they did have the picture. Okay, I didn't know.
So they did have the picture and. And the prosecutor did not discover this in his brief either, so if I could just hand
it.
Okay, so your argument is...
Well, I mean, I have this picture
here.
This
and
is the slideshow.
Yes.
And it's a little bit more cropped than this picture.
Yes, and that's the alteration.
All right.
So it was not blown up from a driver's license.
But your real argument related to alteration has to do with the captions and the language.
Yes, and really... about the argument that the prosecutor was trying to make. And it really, the most analogous case is Walker. And Walker lays out the rule that, you know, a prosecutor, closing argument does not give a prosecutor the right to present altered versions of admitted evidence to support the state's theory of the case or to present derogatory depictions of the defendant. And effectively, that's what we have here. We have a picture of...
Well, you're not saying, though, that, I mean, there's still equivalent of a harmless error analysis. If the picture that was admitted as an exhibit looked like this, and it was just slightly cropped, there's got to be more to your argument than that, right?
There is more to my argument than that. That's the alteration. But the problem comes in the prejudice and how it's presented.
Is the adding of a caption to a photograph an alteration of evidence?
It can be. And I think in this case it crossed the line. If it modifies the exhibit, then yes, it's an alteration to the admitted exhibit.
Could a prosecutor put a caption on a photograph? What would be either the scope of the text of it or the nature?
Well, I don't think the prosecutor can put a caption onto the admitted exhibit, and then the prosecutor may sometimes be able to get away with placing it below or above, you know, not modifying the exhibit, but when you consider the exhibit and presentation as a whole.
If the prosecutor had taken this photograph and simply reduced it a little bit in size so there was room on the slide for a caption above it, as long as it wasn't derogatory, would that be okay?
If it did not make the equivalent of an improper argument, then it would be proper.
So in other words, if the prosecutor had this slide and a caption on it and all it said was E.J. Salas, 5'11".
Well, I think it would still See, that's not probative evidence. So in Walker,
well, there was, if you had testimony that that's how tall he was, and that's his name, and that's who he was.
And your argument is this guy was 6 inches taller than.
Well, you notice that's a mug shot and not a complete picture of Mr. Stiles.
Yeah, but it wasn't objected to.
It wasn't objected to, but when it came in, it came in for the purpose of identification. Mr. Stiles' appearance when he. Could you say that?
Isn't this his driver's
license? It is.
Isn't that a common identification for people?
It is, but during closing argument, identification was not an issue. His appearance when he got his driver's license is an irrelevant fact.
Yeah, just but like, his size and his height is relevant.
Yes, and there were photos of Mr. Stiles in the record, and if they wanted to show his size and height, they should have put the whole driver's license there, which actually would have showed his height and weight. But instead, what the prosecutor did was they want to focus in on Mr. Stiles, and if you look at this, this makes him appear at large, and it's contrasted with the picture of the decedent, Mr. Lopez, who is kneeling.
It's the juxtaposition that you're arguing.
Correct, and if you looked in Walker, the final slide in Walker was a picture of the decedent, and that picture was juxtaposed with the previous slide of the defendant, in fact, his mugshot. And Walker said that was plainly an appeal to the jury's emotions, and that juxtaposition was improper, even though these exhibits were admitted.
Was improper, or just the use of the mugshot, or both?
I think the Supreme Court was concerned with the entire display, and they.
Well, they were mainly concerned with the issue they talk about first, which is the guilty, guilty, guilty. But that's fine. Well, I mean, they do talk about juxtaposition, but it's also.
Also, yes, I think Walker is a very broad case. But it stands for a lot more, and I don't think it can be limited to its facts, and I think its holding applies in this
well,
case.
Well, but Walker says it's perfectly appropriate, and they understand that there will be a slideshow presentation.
Yes. And
the law also makes it very clear that there's nothing wrong with using in-life photographs of the victim.
Well, I disagree on that based on Walker, which highlighted, it's basically said it was inappropriate to.
That was the juxtaposition.
Yes, and that same juxtaposition is occurring in this case. And in fact, the final slide in this case shows a picture of the decedent smiling and embracing the defendant's aunt. And that's plainly.
What would your argument be if instead of using a slide, the prosecutor simply had an admitted exhibit, that photograph, blown up and put on an easel and left it on the easel while she presented closing argument?
By itself. That might be proper if her comments didn't cross the line into an improper argument. That would be okay.
How does it cross the line to put the picture on a slide rather than to blow it up and put it on an easel?
It's not just about blowing it up. It's about juxtaposing the images and impliedly making an emotional appeal to the jury that you should convict Mr. Stiles of murder based on his appearance and the appearance of the decedent. That's what's going on here.
We've got an array of easels. 10 easels with 10 photographs, all the photographs that are in the slides, plus a few of the bloody photographs in the evidence. They're all just put on easels behind the prosecutor, and the prosecutor leaves them up for the 20 minutes she argues. Anything wrong with that?
I think that would, if they put the two pictures like in this case and then made the same arguments, I think that would also be misconduct.
Thank you.
Hey, please, the court. Seth Aaron Fine, Deputy Prosecutor for Snohomish County, representing the respondent of the state of Washington. At trial, there was one objection raised to this PowerPoint display, that basically that it was improper to put captions on photographs, that you just couldn't have a slideshow that includes captions because that's altering exhibits. Appellant's brief seems to suggest along the same lines, but I think it's acknowledged today that the use of captions is not inherently wrong, that it depends upon the nature of the captions and whether they are reasonable arguments from the evidence and whether they are.
Walker has this statement, that closing argument provides an opportunity to draw the jury's attention to the evidence presented, but it does not give a prosecutor the right to present altered versions of admitted evidence to support the state's theory of the case. Why doesn't that prohibit captions? I couldn't write on the exhibit.
You can't write on the exhibit, but you can write above the exhibit. You could display the exhibit while speaking certain words. And there's no reason why you can't put those same words that could properly be used in argument
above, next to, beneath the exhibit, provided that the exhibit itself is not altered. Then,
well, that
isn't that the question? I mean, you said something about reasonable, and is it a reasonable argument? There's a, I don't know if you have seen it, but there's a recent law review article, so to speak, by a prosecutor who basically says, you know, all of these problems that people have with PowerPoints and featuring Washington State as Exhibit A with guilty, 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 boil down to if you can't say it, don't display it. Do you think that's a good rule?
Yes, absolutely.
Right. So in that vein, if you were not using pictures, but you were only arguing to the jury, do you think it would be proper to say, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, compare these two people as you're evaluating the issue of self-defense? We have somebody here who was a football player, a fighter, and an outdoorsman. Do you really think that he would be the person who would be the victim in a contest with somebody who is a band leader, a saxophone player, and a customer service representative? Is that a fair argument?
Yes, it is a fair argument.
It is, you think. It's not a propensity evidence argument.
It is not a propensity evidence. And
tell me why you think that.
Because of the fact
that... Tell me perhaps even a case that you can think of that has to do not with PowerPoint, but with argument, that says it's okay to make an argument like the one I just mentioned.
Okay. It has to do with the fact of this case. Bear in mind that what we have is a person allegedly defending himself by use of a deadly weapon against an unarmed assault. And yes, it's true that according to the defendant's version, this assault began with use of a knife, but under the defendant's testimony, he took the knife away from the victim very early in this confrontation and then continued to push the knife at him, stabbing him repeatedly while the victim attempted to attack him with bare hands. Now, we know from cases like State v. Walker, and they're cited in my brief, that under some circumstances, use of a deadly weapon can be permissible in response to a bare-handed assault. We also know that that isn't true under all circumstances, and it is for the jury to consider, in light of all applicable factors, whether that use of force is reasonable.
Those and so in arguing to the jury without the use of the PowerPoint, given those facts that you just outlined, is it fair for the prosecutor to get up and say, ladies and gentlemen, you have to decide credibility here, you have to look at the circumstances, you have to see, you know, who was really doing what in this fight, and consider the relative merits of these two people. One of them was a fighter in high school, and the other one was a saxophone player. And he was a customer service representative. Aren't you really saying, this guy over here was just a short little wimp, whereas we know about this guy that he was a fighter?
It's not a question.
Isn't that character and propensity evidence?
It's not a question of character and propensity evidence.
Okay,
it's a question.
Back to my question. What case do you think, in all the prosecutorial conduct cases that I'm sure you've practically memorized in your long career, says, quite apart from PowerPoint, that it's okay to make that kind of an argument with words?
In terms of prosecutorial misconduct, I don't believe that it has been discussed. But in terms of standards for self-defense, it has been discussed. State v. Walden, which is cited in my brief, talks about the factors that can enter into whether a person reasonably fears great bodily harm from an unarmed attack, and includes size. It refers to size, strength, age, and numerous other factors of the individuals involved.
Well, in that case, wouldn't you have to show then that Salas, who's, I guess, the person whose subjective point of view we're concerned about, would have to know, and a person in his position would consider it relevant to know that Jesse was a saxophone player and a customer service representative as well as a band leader?
Yeah.
Why is that important to know? Why is that important to juxtapose?
It is important
for any reason other than to draw an emotional response.
Well, first of all, I mean, these two people knew each other quite well, and so Mr. Salas knows the physical capabilities of Mr. Lopez, and the question is, in view of Mr. Salas's size, his strength, his experience with, you know, his experience with weapons, his experience in using his physical size and strength as a weapon, because football playing is a form of unarmed combat. In effect, people use their bodies to overcome one another. Is it reasonable for him to fear that he is in great bodily harm from an unarmed combat from a person who has no such comparable experience? That's why this juxtaposition is important under the facts of this case. In many cases, it would be improper. If this was like a robbery murder, as it was in Glassman, there would be no basis for this kind of comparison. But in a self-defense case, and particularly a self-defense case that involves use of deadly force against an unarmed attack, these kinds of factors are quite relevant. And
so assume you didn't have the juxtaposition of the photos, and you simply had the ability to put those two pictures up, then could the prosecutor argue that there was testimony about Mr. Salas and he played football, et cetera, and there was testimony about Jesse and he was a band leader and did this and that and compare size. Would that be appropriate? I mean, that's back to Judge Becker's question.
And the answer is yes, it is entirely.
But of course the prosecutor didn't make that argument in words. The prosecutor simply put this picture up. Prosecutor didn't make the argument. What do you think, ladies and gentlemen, of the comparison between somebody who used to be a saxophone player in high school and somebody who was a football player in high school? Who's going to win this fight?
The prosecutor did argue about the reasonableness of the use of force in self-defense, and I don't know that there's any requirement that what's put up on the slide need also be expressed in words. And bear in mind as well that there was no objection of the trial court to this specific juxtaposition. The only objection was to the use of captions.
And the argument was the same one here, which is I think the argument was to the judge that this is testimony, it's evidence, there's no reason not to put it on the
spot. Yes, the idea that, you know, it's improper to make the comparison between these two individuals, that these particular captions draw attention to improper factors, was not raised, which means that there is an additional prong that has to be overcome by the appellant, not merely that it was improper and not merely that it affected the verdict, but that it could not. Excuse me.
Could you address the cop-out comment argument?
We realize there was no objection.
Yes, and the thrust of that comment is not an opinion, not a personal opinion, but a comment on the evidence that because the evidence of murder was clear, the lesser included offenses are a cop-out. A cop-out is an evasion of responsibility. The jury instructions told the jury that if they are convinced of the defendant beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant is guilty as charged, they shouldn't reach the lesser offenses, and that's what the prosecutor said. The evidence overwhelmingly proves the guilt as charged, therefore they shouldn't consider the lesser offenses. This conviction should be affirmed.
Thank you.
The cop-out comments were a direct assault on the jury instructions. You know, jury instruction number 20 told the jury that when a crime has been proved against a person and there exists a reasonable doubt as to which of two or more crimes that a person is guilty, he or she shall be convicted only of the lowest crime. The prosecutor was telling the jury, forget your jury instructions. If you have a reasonable doubt, don't follow them. Convict Mr. Salas of murder. Manslaughter would be a cop-out. That's what the prosecutor was doing. This is why the Illinois and Florida courts have held this as an improper argument, and this court should do so as well.
Could it have been cured?
No, it came during rebuttal, and it was immediately on rebuttal, and it was so flagrant that curative instruction would have not been effective at that point.
Why not?
Well, we know that comments during rebuttal are more have more potential for
being rebuked by the judge has a powerful effect on the jury. Judges, I mean, lawyers don't like to have the judge sustain an objection in their closing argument.
Well, and juries follow the court's instruction to disregard the statement or argument.
I mean, that's Juries are given those instructions in every prosecutorial misconduct case.
Well, but they do follow them.
They're presumed to follow their instructions, but I think this comment, I mean, I would just rest on what I've said before, on why it should be considered for the first time on appeal. To make a few more points, the driver's license listed Mr. Salas's weight as 185 pounds. The testimony trial about the Mr. Lopez was that he was 180. You'll notice their weight does not appear on the first slide. Roughly. I mean, the driver's license was, you know, from a year or two earlier, so I don't know if it's exactly on point. That's another reason why the driver's license photo wasn't probative. And the prosecutor did take Mr. Sauce's testimony out of context. He said he feared that Mr. Lopez was trying to take the knife, and he feared for his life. So I'd ask this court to reverse for prosecutorial misconduct and remand for a fair trial.
Thank you.